F4.
Number 13A.
We have taken the Christ as the Christ, which shows us the translation of the divine truth to the point of infinite individual truth, and being the savior for such a situation, whatever that situation is. And in order to show that translation, John introduces four different situations, all of them showing that Christ's translation is an instantaneous translation, that it has nothing to do with a time concept. So the very first situation he showed, there are not 4 months until there is harvest. Lift up your eyes and you see that the fields are ready for harvest. It's now. So that we entertain in our consciousness always the nowness of that translation, that the Christ working is not something that has something to do with the human working. The human working always takes in a time process. We only can do one thing after the other and the other and the other. But the Christ is an instantaneous activity. He shows that again in a second symbol with a healing of the nobleman's son. Again there he wants to show the moment Jesus realized the truth about the situation of that son that was sick and was going to die, that the moment he saw that, it translated itself down right to the situation of that sick boy, and he was healed at the very moment, and it was then symbolized through the nobleman coming down from Cana down to Capernaum, on meeting on the way the servant, and came up from Capernaum up to Cana and met them, so that the descending and the ascending way are one way, that they are simultaneous. Therefore, I always felt it would have been nice if it would have been possible for Mrs. Eddy to print the two translations on the page 115 and 16 side by side, but that is not very easy to do. And so she printed them one after the other, which naturally led then to false conclusion. It led to conclusion that it takes a time process for the descending way, namely for the Christ order to come down from the divine principle over life, truth and love to soul, spirit, that to the point of mind, as idea, as the immediate object of understanding, which then afterwards would be the cause of the second translation of bringing really immortality out of the first degree, then to the second degree, then to the third degree. So in this way, John felt he could perhaps symbolize that these two translations are one translation and that they are simultaneous. Now, we come to the third example of this Christ translation and showing that it is always a spontaneous and instantaneous healing. Just as with the nobleman's son, it was an instantaneous healing. So also here, he shows this in another circumstance. This, you will see the tone of Christianity. And why it has the tone of Christianity, we will see as we go through the text. My epitome is that the Christ idea must be used instantaneously. So you can already see that it is Christianity. Always the using of the Christ idea is Christianity. You know, John Dolly made it very simple. He said, the word is seeking, the Christ is finding, and the Christianity is using, and science is being. He just could reduce those four sides to a to the level of human understanding in this way. So it is, Christianity is the using of the Christ idea. Here we have it too, the Christ idea must be used, but it must be used instantaneously, at once. Again, it is a sense of the isness of that Christ translation. The situation which he describes is near Jerusalem. There was a pool of Bethesda, and Bethesda had five porches. It had the five physical corporeal senses, that pool, and there was a great multitude of impotent folk there. So you can see the whole sum total of mortality was there. So it was a symbol of all the mortals that are fighting with a problem were there. And it gives a symbol that it is applicable, so to say, for every one of us, for the whole of mortality. And they were waiting for the moving of the waters. We always must remember at that time everybody was Jewish. They were trained in the Old Testament. They knew the Testament inside, outside. They were familiar with the symbolism of the Old Testament. It's not like us who first have to get acquainted with the symbolism of the Old Testament. But those around about him naturally knew it. And so when he was speaking, he was naturally using a lot of the Old Testament sayings. So here he was speaking about the moving of the waters, therefore indicating the fifth day of the creation, where you know that the waters were moved, that there were moving creatures in the water, the fishes and so on. It meant that something is happening, that there is life going on. The moving of the waters, the moving creatures that have life, was the rendering in the fifth day of creation. So it gives a sense of the fifth day of creation with the five physical senses, and gives the counterfeit sense first. Namely, they were waiting for the moving of the water. They were waiting, and you at once see that this is the attitude of mortals, of all mortal mankind. They are always waiting for something good to happen. The good is always in the future. They are waiting that they are lucky. They are waiting that they will the great prize. They are waiting that they will win something in a lotto, in a, what do you call it? Yeah, I didn't understand it, but you know it. That's nice. So it's always waiting for luck. One time I will have luck. It's always waiting for. It's the counterfeit of life, of the fifth day, the day of life. So they were waiting for salvation in the future, just as before we had, there are still 4 months until the harvest. That was also saying the harvest is in the future, luck is in the future, the paradise is in the future. Everything good is always in the future, not now. So he had to correct that. You see, he had to bring that sense that luck and fullness and riches and improvement and everything that is good is in the future, had to bring it back to the now. Well, they were waiting for what? For the movings of the water. What did the waters move? So the text goes on, For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. So, again, an angel, that was always a good thought, not an idea. She never defines angel as idea, always as God's thoughts, not as idea. So an angel, a good thought, you see, you are again way back with the days of creation, with water and with angels, with good thinking. So an angel went down at a certain season. Now we can see again, this is a counterfeit of the isness of life, only at a certain season. And in between those certain seasons, it was very dull living, nothing happened, nothing good happened, there was no luck, there was no fullness. So only at a certain season he came down in the pool and troubled the water. So only from time to time a good idea was troubling the water, was bringing a chemicalization and overturning. And so it was not really showing the isness of the Christ. So that angel was not the Christ. It was just good thinking that from time to time overcomes us. Which then, whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped into it, was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. So one can see this is typical, our belief in chance. Only the first one did win, had a big jackpot, but the others lost what they put into it. So there was chance they believed in chance and not in law. So at certain seasons they would be lucky. They would have a stroke of good fortune just here and there and win the first prize or so. So it was exceptional, extraordinary. Well, being is not exceptional, it always isness. It's nothing that happens here and then, there. It is the Christ is an isness sense. It's here, yesterday, today, and forever. So within us, we have to correct something because we feel ourselves somehow in the same position as this lame man, that we think the salvation is not right here and now. We feel that we will have to work out things so that in the future they will be worked out. We have the future, a future salvation. And so to this situation came Jesus. And there was also a man with infirmity that was laying there since 38 years. That's quite a long time, 38 years, to lay around near a pool and waiting for the moving of the waters and hoping that he would be the first one to get into the water. This is a long, long time. This is a pathetic situation, I would say. And Jesus came to this man who was laying there sick for 38 years and made quite a comic remark to us, as it appears to us. Can you imagine Jesus coming to that situation and saying, "Wilt thou be made whole?" This is a silly question. How on earth could one ask such a question? Would you ask such a question to a man who has infirmity since 38 years and say, "Yeah, look here, boy, actually, do you want to get healed or not?" Yeah? So, apparently Jesus had something else in mind than to be a comic. Yes. Because he could see that there was something lacking in that man. See, he could see that not he, Jesus, would have to be the savior to that situation. He could see that something in that man was completely wrong and that he had to replace it by the Christ idea in that man, by the Christ consciousness in that man. So, you see it, why he asked that question. Because the impotent man answered, "Sir, I have no man. I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another step is down before me." See, the answer is typical. I have no man. He felt helpless. He had no manhood in himself. He didn't have the Christ man in himself. He didn't know that the Christ was in him. He denied the Christ in him. So the question that Jesus asked, "Will you actually be whole? You are laying around since 38 years and you don't know that you have the Christ within you." that you could be made whole right away if you would appeal to your manhood, to your true manhood, to your Christ manhood. If you would appeal to that, you wouldn't have to lay around. So he was trying to wake up that man out of his lethargy, of his apathy, and said, and so he said to that man, "Rise, rise, take up thy bed and walk." He gave him three advices. You see, he didn't say, "I will make you whole." He appealed to the Christ in the patient and said, "You have the same Christ in you as I have. So you rise up, you rise to that consciousness. Get out of your lethargy, get out of your apathy, get out. Stand on your legs, get up, rise, take up thy bed." The bed, as we have seen, where one lies on is always a sense of consciousness, as a symbol of consciousness. He laid on a bed. He was very willing to be sick and to acknowledge himself to be impotent and to be sick for 38 years. His consciousness was constantly lying on that apathetical, lethargical aspect of manhood. So he said, "Take up thy bed, take up thy consciousness, rise out of that lethargy, take up your consciousness. You are not a mortal, you don't have to entertain a mortal consciousness. You can stand up. So stand up and walk." He didn't even say stand up. He said, "Go forward and walk, go forward." He could see that that man didn't want to go forward, that he was quite happy to be sick for 38 years and just waiting for luck. So this was, can you see, this was a different healing than the one he had before of the nobleman's son. There Jesus was the moving factor. Jesus said, "Thy son liveth." Huh? And it was at the seventh hour, it was at that consciousness that Jesus entertained of the completeness and perfection of consciousness. And with that consciousness of Jesus, he could say, "Thy son liveth." But here, the consciousness of Jesus is not described. He describes how man, the patient, should appeal to that he has the Christ consciousness too. Can you see Christianity? See, it appeals to man. Man is always at the point of Christianity. God is at the point of the Word, and the Christ naturally as the Christ Son, and then man and the universe is at the point of Christianity. So it's a mighty thought, really, for us, because we can see the whole of mankind today is in that state of apathy, lethargy, because it does not want to accept the Christ. It just waits and waits, and happily and luckily enough, we will survive. We don't know if we will survive, if nature will not beat back and destroy us. We don't know yet that. It may be that after 50 years, nature will hit back at us and destroy mankind. We don't know it yet, but we happily live on. Huh? And if there is somebody coming on and says, "Do you want to get healed of it?" They don't listen. They don't rise up. They don't take up their bed and walk. They don't go forward. They want to take the old problem and heal it in the old way. So it means that we too should have that attitude that Jesus had, that he gave to the patient here today, that we give to the universe, really, the ability to rise up. That the whole universe has the Christ consciousness. The Christ consciousness we cannot limit to a place, to a people. It's universal, it's a universal idea, and somehow we should accept that there is a universal Christ at work in the universe. And can say to this man and to that man, to this nation and that nation, can say, "Rise up." And we have seen that since we have seen this very Christ idea in that way, that since that time, individuals like Gorbachev, that nations like the Eastern nation did rise up. We only have to give them the Christ consciousness and don't rob them of their Christ consciousness just because for a while they were for 70 years subdued and under dictatorship. In spite of that, that Christ idea was there and was just waiting for the occasion to arise, to rise up and walk and go forward. And they went forward. And so let's see that we entertain also that consciousness. We will not meet the lame man that was 30 and 80 years lying at the pool of Bethesda. We not even quite know where that pool is. Huh? But it is just one symbol for a universal problem. For a universal problem that the whole of mankind, a lot of folks were there. Huh? It was said that, what was the rendering? That the great multitude of impotent folks were there. So we can say, yes, here we have a universe of 5 billion people or more, but they seem to be impotent. But if we leave it at that, we kill the Christ idea. Jesus came and said to that man, no, you have the Christ consciousness within you. And so we should see that in every way, be it nationally, internationally, be it politically, be it scientifically, there's always some Christ consciousness at work that takes a scientist and shows him that there is some more to be seen and more to be learned in his department, in his discipline of science, that there are always politicians, thinkers, poets and writers and authors that suddenly rise up like Hubble, that really had the Christ idea awake in themselves for many, many years, you see, for many, many years. And it just took the occasion that it sprang up and then it did it. So this is a way of looking at our present universe and the situation in the universe. People are so often asking, well, how should we look at the universe? What is the answer to the universe? How can we help the world? What shall we do? Well, here is one example our attitude is, that we give to the world, including all those 5 billion people, that they have the Christ consciousness, that they have it, so that we can say, rise up, take up thy boat, go forward, and therefore things will go forward and have gone forward. Rise up thy bed and walk. And immediately, can you see now again, the sense of immediateness, as we had it before, spontaneousness, immediateness, nowness. And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed. He repeats those three phases. He took up his bed, so he arose in consciousness and walked. So he didn't stall. That was the question, that he didn't stall. Now, that's the problem in every religion, that the religion always somehow is founded by big visionary, that is founded by a Moses or by the prophets or by by Buddha or whatever it was, by Jesus, that it was founded by Mrs. Eddy, and so on. There were always big people rising up and went forward. The trouble is always that then after a while it flattens out and people stall. That's why we must see that we keep alive that sense to go forward, to go forward, to go forward, to go forward, never to be satisfied with having seen something new. It's wonderful, be joyous about it, be glad about it, be grateful about it, but then always have a feeling, but that's a step within the chain of scientific being. It's just a link within that chain. It goes further and further and further. And only if we entertain that consciousness of ever going forward, we will not stall. So we come to the next example where this is brought even more into focus, namely when we look at it from the point of view of science. I epitomized it like this, that healing must be the outcome of the Christ impulsion for progress in science. Healing must not be the end of all, purpose of all, and say, well, he's healed, we have made the demonstration. That was only true up to Christianity, up to this point where the lame man was healed. But it must go further. We shouldn't then be grateful and happy and pay the check to the practitioner, and that's that. It should always be only one link in that fourfold chain. And therefore, John went further. We come now to the point where it was said in verse 9b, and on that same day, it was the Sabbath. Now the Sabbath was naturally a holy day. It was the day where you are not allowed to work, where you are not allowed to carry any weight, where you are not allowed to walk more than so and so many yards and so on. They had all those laws that would define that at the Sabbath you are not allowed to do any work. So the Jews said, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. It actually reads a bit ridiculous now for us to say, golly, here is a man that was for 38 years lame, and now he's healed, and now he's not even allowed to carry his bed. That dogma comes in and wants to kill, really, the healing. Wants to say, you shouldn't have been healed. You should have waited some time longer. But not on the Sabbath. So you can see how very often religion comes in and tries to destroy what has been established.